My name is Victoria Matei.
My name is Olga Araceli.
And we are both undocumented women of color.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks again for listening. And if you're a new listener, thanks for joining in. So we're going to go ahead and just check in with each other. Vicky, how are you doing?
I am doing well. I feel motivated to keep working on a lot of the podcasts that we've been doing. If you tuned into the last one, I was really happy with how it turned out. It was definitely a longer one and it took more to like listen to, but a lot of the feedback we've been getting about it is that it was informational and people really enjoyed listening to it. And I think, you know, hearing things like that after we release a podcast and like hearing your reviews and what you have to like, you know, your feedback in mm-hmm. general really kind of excites us and motivates us to keep doing what we're doing. So thank you for giving us that like opportunity and space and motivation to keep continue doing this kind of project. I don't know what am I doing with myself. I'm still working for Western Washington University, and I am just gonna quickly do a plug on what's been happening. So at Western right now, there's a ton of students of color organizing because essentially the university does not take responsibility for what happens on campus, and students just genuinely do not feel safe on campus. And it started with, I mean, it's been ongoing for years and various things that have happened. One in particular being a Yik Yak incident where the AS president got essentially like threatened on Yik Yak. And so like, you know, the university addressing these things have never been essentially appropriate, and students are like over it. And so they organized a community forum, and it was like so, it was intense. Like, I kid you not, like 500, 600 people showed up, and there was like all the president and the vice president and every dean of the colleges within Western all sitting at the front, and like the full room of students of color just like expressing what they needed and, you know, just asking them questions, and it got hot. It was like, it was intense. And it was also followed on the news a little bit. But I just wanna, you know, plug that in to recognize the students doing that work, because as I work in the Ethnic Student Center, I have to be one of the support systems. And I'm not gonna lie, I don't know how to do that because I was just a student a few months ago. But just like recognizing that, you know, I think what they're doing is really important and pivotal to the history of Western and hopefully the future. And, you know, as they list their demands, and I'll probably link the demands as well so you can check out more about the story. Mm-hmm. What about you, Olga? What do you have to share? You haven't told me anything. Like, earlier today I was like, Olga, are you happy? I'm going to ask you that again. Are you happy?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. That question, for some reason.
Isn't it weird?
It's such a weird, I can't find the words to describe it, that I said I was content, I guess. Like, there's nothing really bothering me right now, which is weird because I feel like I always have shit going on. But, yeah, I just kind of been also, like, following up with that and, like, what's going on with Western. And I've had, like, a couple of the students there also, like, reach out and just, like, share their, like, demands and, like, you know, to sign, like, forms and, you know, like, sign a letter as an alumni also, like, how to support them. And, like, I'm all the way down in, like, Tacoma, so it's kind of, like, hard, you know, to, like, show up to these things and, like, really be there for the folks. But I think they're, like, sharing, I guess, their Facebook and just, like, also letting other people know. That's how I've been kind of, like, supporting and keeping up. Like you said, it was a lot of, like, incidents and things. I was thinking, and I don't really recall when, but also, like, things that happened, like, post-elections and just, like, all the chalk writings and everything that we saw around campus and the mm-hmm. lack of, like, accountability that Western really, like, held towards the people, really putting that pain on us. So I'm kind of upset that that's still going on, and pretty sure, unfortunately, that's still going to keep going until there's a change made. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm doing good. like there's not really nothing. I don't know.
Have you been dancing?
I haven't.
We need to go dancing. We're gonna go dancing tonight.
Yeah,
we're gonna do it.
No, I haven't done anything. Oh well, I guess I've been like practicing bordando. So for those of y'all who keep up, like I'm in like the path of recovering like our indigenous Purépecha ways. And so bordando or like embroidering is and like has been a huge part of a lot of indigenous people. And so I've been kind of like practicing that and really like just taking time to meditate and like learning a lot about myself. So that's been like interesting.
Like I've mentioned, Olga's the most patient person in the world. So seeing her be patient with herself is something new.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about it.
I'm excited as you go through this journey, and I wish I could take the journey with you, but I'm consumed. I'm consumed. Well, like Olga mentioned, we have a special guest on today, and this is someone that I think I met by just like we were attending similar events. I believe one time you came up to me, or he came up to me asking if he could take a photo of me, and then I found it later on the internet at an event thing. And I think that's how we connected and started like talking. So our guest today is Leo. Do you want to share a little bit about yourself, and then we can kind of introduce the topic that we're going to talk about today?
Yeah. Thank you for having me here. I'm really grateful for the opportunity just to share and be in partnership and community with y'all. So a little bit about myself. I was born in Oaxaca, Mexico, Rancho Viejo, Villa Sola de Vega, to be exact. I really like saying that because nobody really knows where it is. And so there's a little bit of mystery. I have been in this country since I was 10 years old, and lived in the Everett, Seattle area ever since. So I haven't really left this you know, side of the country, the upper left. Mm-hmm. So
the upper left. The upper why left. Is that so? That sounds appropriate. So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, what topic you wanted to discuss. And, you know, we came to this conclusion of like, it's going to be a conversation about identity and specifically about being undocumented. So like, how would you define being undocumented?
I would define being undocumented as living under like a social and political condition that really shapes your experience living in a country that doesn't really fully adopt you. But I think there's also another set, there's beauty to being undocumented as well. There's you know, it's an experience that really builds you up as a person, really makes you a resilient individual. And to me, for what I know, for who I've been around, being undocumented really means, you know, persevering and, mm-hmm. and, you know, working hard and like just, you know, always, you know, like fighting forward. And so that to me is being undocumented.
I really like what you were saying about like we're having to live by these like policies and laws that depict everything for us, except for we have, again, either no say and or like we don't choose to live under these conditions. So like, you know, I'm sure that's not where you're like where you started processing what being undocumented was like, but like how long did it take you to like, you know, reflecting and speaking and community organizing for you to get to, you know, that part of what you're saying, like understanding that you being undocumented is a social construct. So like,
it's a journey, right? Because for me, being undocumented wasn't really like a big part of who I was necessarily. I was just a brown, you know, like kid trying to learn English, and I always knew that I was undocumented, and it wasn't never hidden for me. You know, it's a really, really normal like aspect of life in, around, you know, my people, I suppose. But I, you know, as I continue going through the, you know, educational pipeline, you become a little bit more aware about the implications that this, you know, being undocumented has at a, you know, much bigger scale, you know, in a systematic way. And so you start understanding and really adopting that as, you know, being undocumented as part of who you are, and, you know, how you navigate and how you see this world, this country. And so it took me a long time to go through that. And then there comes anger, right? Like, you're angry at the fact that this is happening and all these things. And so I think it's just part of, like, you know, us human beings, like, you know, understanding and evolving in so many different ways, you know. And then eventually I understand, you know, being undocumented as a very political and societal, you know, like, condition, but not necessarily as a identity, where it, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't really guide, you know, like my dreams, my aspirations anymore, you know. I mm-hmm. think it's something that I'm always, like, aware of, and that I consider as, you know, because it, being undocumented, you have, like, you know, you don't have a lot of access to certain things, right? And so being aware of that, but also just, like, this is not going to limit myself, you know, for my dreams and everything that I want to do.
So one of the questions I was going to ask was, what would you do if you weren't undocumented? Like, if you woke up tomorrow and you were no longer undocumented, like, what is the first thing you would do?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, you know, because that's what I'm saying, that it's not an identity, right? Like people, it's just like poverty, right? Like, people, like, the minute that you have money, like, you're no longer poor. And mm-hmm. so you don't really think as if you were, like, you know, like, you don't behave the same way, yeah. right? And so that's the same with being undocumented. I think I've thought about this, right? And say, like, what would I do if I wasn't undocumented? What would be my story? What would mm-hmm. it be, like, how relevant am I at this point, I right?
know. What would your life, like, be?
Yeah. Yeah, what would my life be? I would honestly would travel. Like, that's first thing that I would do. I see myself in, like, all over Latin America, for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Oh, there was something in my head, and then it escaped me.
As I'm, like, hearing you talk, like, that's where I'm at right now. Really not seeing being undocumented as part of my identity, as I'm reclaiming my Indigenous identity. And that's who I want to be, and that's who I want to move forward, or, like, you know, towards becoming. And it's, like, this battle inside of me, like, for so long I've been like kind of like fed that idea, mm-hmm. kind of like, okay, being undocumented is, like, my identity, and, like, that's how, like, I've been kind of, like, defining myself and also really presenting myself. Mm-hmm. And so now, like, for me, it's like, okay, now how do I want to present myself, and mm-hmm. like, what do I want, you know, other folks to know? And also, like, how am I going to explain that I'm Indigenous? Because some people don't, I feel, they won't understand, like, you're Indigenous or you're Native, but then, like, how are you undocumented, mm-hmm. you know? And because in terms of, like, I think Mexican indigeneity, I feel like it's been so erased that people forget, you know, that we exist. And so, especially, like, up here where we have, like, the federally, like, recognized tribes, like, for us, we don't, like, we're not recognized. And so then really, how am I, like, recognized as in quotes, you know, like, here, and how do I make people recognize me as the Indigenous person that I am? So I'm in, like, with that battle, but I really appreciate you, because I feel like these are, like, the words that I've been, like, wanting to hear, to really, like, come to senses to myself that, like, undocumented is not, or not part of the identity that I want anymore.
Yeah. See, and I'm, like, hella struggling with that, because I feel like a lot of people have, you know, built careers off of this title. And, you know, we'll talk more about the undocumented movement, but a lot of the reason that we've been able to, like, navigate a little bit more is because mm-hmm.
Because of that.
Because of that sometimes. Like, even though there's so many other barriers, like, you know, especially during, like, after the election time, like, now people are like, oh, we want to hear your story. We want to know more about you. Like, I feel like more people are open to having that, like, I don't know. I just kind of feel like, for me, I've just presented myself so many mm-hmm. times as undocumented that I, like, can't imagine not doing it anymore, yeah. you know? So I need to get to where y'all are at, because I'm not there yet, and I'm, like, fully admitting that. You're halfway.
No, I mean, it's a process, right? Because mm-hmm. I still, you know, depending on the context, I will still present myself as undocumented mm-hmm. Because there's power to it. Like, you know, you feel empowered, mm-hmm. and you're like, this means something to me. I'm doing something, right? It's purposeful, like it has meaning, symbolic, whatever. And but you know, at the end of the day, it's just something that is conditional. You know, it's not really like a, like you said, an identity. And what people don't understand is that, like, people who you know, like undocumented people are so multidimensional. You know, like we have so many different identities, so many different ways to. Relate to one each other mm-hmm. beyond just not having, you know, documentation. So I think it's a process.
Yeah, for sure. That kind of reminds me of, like, you know, this just popped in my head, and I know that you're a fan too, but Yosimar, he was like, why do I have to be that undocumented poet? Why can't I just be a poet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And be recognized for his hard work and amazing work as, you know, being a poet, not having this, like, undocumented before it, and kind of taking, like,
yeah.
almost credit, or mm-hmm. like that it would give you more credit. I don't know. I don't know how I would, like,
it'll sell more, right? Like, it's trendy.
It's now. Trendy. Yeah, there like, you go. So trendy.
Being undocumented, you know, everybody wants to have an undocumented person in their school, you know, in their environments. But again, I think for Yosimar to realize that, I think it took some time too. You
yeah,
know, like
100%.
It wasn't like, you know, oh, like, I can never relate. You know, it was just more like, it's a process. Mm-hmm. And I don't see myself this way anymore.
Totally. So before we go more into identity and, like, intersecting identities, like, you mentioned earlier and prior to this conversation a little bit about, like, you remember that experience of crossing the border. You were 10 years old, and, like what... You know, you, like, you were, oh, I forgot what sentence you used, but do you want to tell us a little bit about that experience of, like, knowing that you were about to go on that? You said adventure, which I thought was...
Yeah. I mean, when you're 10, you know, you don't really think about the consequences of certain actions, right? Like, I knew that, you know, I was excited to see El Norte, you know, this country. Mm-hmm. And so... Like, we came, we got kidnapped, we crossed the border, we got arrested, we got, you know, got in detention, we got kicked out, and then we tried again. So for me, you know, that experience and it's really important because I was 10, so I had a whole different, you know, understanding of where I came from and never really doubted that I was, like, 100% Mexican, you know, that I was 100% from Oaxaca, and it wasn't like I never went to this process of, like, or am I American, you know, or am I Mexican? Like, I knew that I was Mexican, you know, so that was I guess that's a privilege in its own, you know, not to having to, like, have, like, identity crisis and things like mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've heard like a couple people mentioned that, you know, that they're, like, in between, like, okay, what do I want to, like, identify myself with? Something that I think about is, like, my siblings, where they're, like, am I Mexican or am I American? And then, like, I'm always, like, well, you can't, like, identify, like, as a white person, because I'm, like, you're, like, your parents are Mexican, we're Mexican. Like, that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. Like, that's... like your background, you know, kind of thing. So it'd be weird if you'd identify as a white person, because nobody in our family is white, you know, both of your parents are Mexican. And I think they've, like, slowly, like, okay, yeah, you're right, you know, like, even though I was born here, that doesn't really make me white. Okay. So you mentioned for you also it's like really normal, right? To like talk about like being undocumented, or it was just like something, you know, that like everybody like around you was familiar with. I know for me that was like a similar experience. Like I knew I was undocumented, like the people I hanged out with, you know, some of them were, some of them weren't. And like sometimes we would talk about that. Or when like some of our friends would go like back to Mexico and like some of us like wouldn't be able to, and we would just kind of like share our experiences. But Vicky has mentioned that like for her it was different, right? Because the environment and the community she grew up with, like that just wasn't something like they talked about, you know, and she didn't have any like similar folks to talk to about. So
yeah. It was like something really normal. And I guess what I mean by normal is that we didn't really talk about it in such a taboo, you know, way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my family, like, so my family, extended family, even, we come from a more like recent wave of immigrants. So everybody my age, all my cousins my age, are all undocumented, you know? And then people younger than me, maybe 3-4 years old, younger than me, started, you know, like, you know, we're born here. Mm-hmm. So we're not like, you know, we don't go like a lot of generations back, you know, like in this country. So for us, it's like, you know, it was something that it was part of, growing up in Mexico and having to like, you know, have aspirations and be like, I'm gonna go to the, you know, to the U.S. and mm-hmm. And everybody did that, and so it's so something so normal. The first time that I actually told someone that I was undocumented, other than just my family, was a teacher in middle school when I was applying for College Bound.
And how
I
did
was
they like, react?
I was like, well, I was just like so bold about it. I was like, oh, I don't have a social, you know, and mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, okay, like, but you need to have one by, you know, by when you graduate high school.
Oh my like, god!
You know,
because they're so easy to get.
And I was like, oh, you know, whatever, you know, like it just like applied for it. And ever since then, you know, like whoever I felt comfortable with, I was like
just casually sharing.
Yeah, I was like, and back then, you know, you didn't really use like, I'm undocumented. It was just more like, oh, I don't have papers.
Or yeah,
like,
yeah, nothing but papeles.
Yeah, well, I don't have a social, or like, you know, just.
I just asked this mm-hmm. guy, I think like a couple days ago, I'm like, ¿tienes papeles? Like, do you have papers? And he was like, I have the right to remain silent.
No, you're right. Like,
okay, I see you. Like, I just want to know. But it's also not appropriate to go around like asking people that folks. Shit. So no. Like,
I think now, I feel like back then maybe they would have been like chill about it, but like with the political climate and then after elections and all that, they're like, you know, unless I like really really know you, then maybe I'll tell you.
But, totally.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do for work?
Sure. So I am. A photographer, first and foremost. That's something that I'm really passionate about. And just creative person, you know, doing a little bit of everything. And then I'm also doing some consulting work with the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs with the City of Seattle. So I've been, you know, doing this work for a long time, not necessarily with the city, but just community organizing and activism and just community work.
What does community organizing like mean to you?
Community organizing means to me it's always like moving people to action, like and it always, for me at least, it's always around, you know, getting people to engage civically and like have a better understanding of what, you know, policies and laws have in their and the impact that those have in their lives, and have them be part of, you know, the decision making. Mm-hmm. because
we're not, yeah.
Yeah, because if we're, you know, if we stand by, like things are going to happen, you know, and who's like, we're going to be the most affected, you know? So
mm-hmm. Most definitely. But I really like how you mentioned, like, you can't rely on this permit. So, like, you know, it checks people of, like, yeah. You know, all of us are so worried about, like, that, you know, we have this thing. But, like you mentioned, we can't rely on it.
Yeah, like, I've said it so many times, you know, like, I don't really rely on my DACA. In fact, I don't, right now, I'm not even using it. Not because, you know, I still have DACA, right? But I just don't really think of myself having DACA in the long run. Like, mm-hmm. You know, totally. It is so, so temporary. And given the situation, you know, like, currently, like, I just feel like it can end at any day. And I've prepared myself to live without DACA. And so right now, you know, through my work, I'm doing consulting work. So not necessarily like an employee, you know. I'm a small business owner, so I have my own, you know, ways of doing
making
the work.
Your ends meet.
Yeah.
And doing what you love.
Yeah. And I think that's for everybody. For everybody, it's different, right? Like, you know, a teacher can't really, like, teach without having a social, right? Because it's a government job.
Yeah.
But people can still teach in a non-traditional way, you mm-hmm. know? Community spaces, like, there's so many ways for you to, like, actually deliver your work and your passion in without having to rely on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know? For sure.
All right. And I think with that, we'll kind of, like, move on to talking about identity, because I think in that we'll also a lot of the people kind of like left out or that didn't make the cut, you know, for DACA, mm-hmm. then part of who probably they identify with or can't identify with, right, as DACA. And so I kind of want to talk about the intersectionalities of like the identities within our the undocumented community, right, and what that means. I think especially for all those kind of that were like left out or also that kind of identify as different ways, and maybe that came to the realization also, kind of you were saying like that undocumented is just this like temporary conditional thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one thing that I think Olga and I always, you know, share with people is like, Olga identifies as being indigenous and being a first generation woman of color, and I identify, you know, as pansexual, and like always having to explain that to people, but I honestly just don't really like talk about it as much because it's just always been like who I am. Mm-hmm. That's just like another intersecting identity within my own that like I never really came out of the closet. It just was who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel the need to like have to justify it to people or explain myself to people. So like, what are some of like, you know, what are some of your identities, intersecting identities?
Yeah, I think to me, the concept of identity is so interesting because it's always evolving, right? Like
mm-hmm.
When I came to this country, for example, all I knew it was that I was like from Oaxaca and that was from Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. And then the you know, the kids around me, the brown kids, would always, you know, say like, oh, you're from Oaxaca, like talk to me in your language, you know, like, and I was like, well, I only speak Spanish, and they would be like, no, but you're from Oaxaca, you look from Oaxaca, so you should know another language.
Mm-hmm.
They were implying that I was like indigenous, right, or that I was part of an indigenous group, and that to me bothered me, just because I was like, oh, I never really knew what it meant to be from Oaxaca until now. Like, mm-hmm. like I, for all I knew, I was just like any other Mexican kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And having that being imposed to me and being like, and at some point I was just like, oh, like, I'm from Oaxaca, but I'm different, you know? Like, I didn't want to be identified as indigenous. Now that I've evolved and that I've like learned a little bit more about that, like, I take that, you know, like, I understand, you know, like my indigeneity and like my, you know, where I come from and all that stuff. But I don't necessarily explicitly introduce myself as an indigenous person, just because there's a lot more that goes into it, right? Like, yeah. And it's something that I'm conscious about, but it's not something that I'm like,
yeah,
I'm an indigenous, you know, dude, you know, like, definitely have a really good understanding of like, you know, my manhood, and I have ways to go, you know, but I think, that's something that also important for me to mention, because there's there's ownership to it, you know, there's like a sense of, accountability and responsibility on my end when it comes to like working around, you know, social justice issues in particular. So that's something. And then just me being, you know, I will always say that I'm a Mexican immigrant living in the U.S. You know, like that's just plain and simple. Like for me, like that doesn't really erase my Mexican identity. It also acknowledges the fact that I'm an immigrant, that that's an experience that nobody's going to take away, even if I get papers, you know?
Yeah.
And then just being, like, living in America, it's just, like, it also has shaped my life, you know? I can't really deny that, you know? But I know that I'm not, like, I wasn't born here, so that's just kind of how I identify.
I was, you know, I did, like, a workshop at the Migrant Youth Conference, and it's, like, middle school and high schoolers, and I knew I had to do something that was, like, low-key and just chill and kind of fun. So, like, I didn't know what to title it, and at first I just wrote, like, it was, like, really last minute that they asked me to speak at it, and I just wrote, like, navigating higher education as like an undocumented person, and I wrote person, and then later on I was like, why did I write person? Like, I understand, like, I am human, I'm a person, but like, why am I erasing immigrant? And so I started kind of reflecting on, like, you know, what imposed me to do that and what my intention was behind it was not essentially, I think, what I was trying, like, my intention was humanizing, you know, but I was not acknowledging that I was erasing history, erasing so much that is tied to that word, because we always say language is so important. So yes, I'm trying to be more aware and acknowledge that, because I don't know why, like, sometimes, like, we're even being convinced that immigrant is a bad word or migrant is a bad word by, like, everything that's happening in the media.
Yeah.
And, like, if it's happening to us, you know, that identify as these things, like, imagine how it's happening to everybody else. And I don't know, it takes a lot of reflecting and, like you said, evolving, and it's, I don't think, like you mentioned, it's an endless process.
Yeah, I think it's something that we all, like, learn as we go.
And, you know, we were, I think I really like this, pretty much shit-talking the Dreamer narrative, because I fucking hate that narrative. And everybody knows why I hate that narrative. And, like, anywhere I go, if someone calls me a dreamer, I tell them, like, no. But sometimes you're in spaces where everybody else identifies as dreamer, or at least the majority, and you just, like, let it go. But, like, what are some of your feelings around that whole?
Yeah, I don't like the word either. One, because it's really exclusive, right? And in some ways, the origins of that word was to really sugarcoat, you know, like the very reality that undocumented people live and prioritize, you know, a few. So I don't like it, but I understand that at some point in someone's lives, that was a really empowering word for them. Because then they were, like, allowed to dream and allowed to really, like, fight for, you know, access to higher education, for, you know, for DACA, for example, all these things, right? And so I'm okay with that word in the past,
yeah.
But moving forward, I would love it if we did not use it.
I know, right? I completely agree. Yeah, for real. And, you know, that's really tied also into, like, the undocumented movement and how, like, that uprose and how It did encourage a lot of youth to get involved and start, you know, mobilizing now that there was some kind of like sugarcoat or protection or whatever that was. Yeah. But like, you know, even within the undocumented movement, it's exclusive as fuck. Like,
yeah.
Everywhere you go in the country, there's an undocumented movement happening. Or I mean, not everywhere, but, you know, like in a lot of places, and they're usually dominated by a small group of people.
Yeah. I think it's all like related, right? Like the people that get higher education and get exposed to all these like theory mm-hmm. and this like oh like you know like history, and you know they have access to a lot of like knowledge that we haven't had access to. You know, like older folks don't have access to, and so that in itself. You know, like people build consciousness, people start getting involved and start leading, mm-hmm. right? Because they have the techniques, they have the ways, the understanding. But then they have set expectations for other people and really don't allow others to grow in the same way because they're like, oh, like, I know better, right? Like, I know better. And it becomes like really ego-centric. Like environment.
It really is. And sometimes it becomes really intimidating too, because you would think like, okay, I always say I'm going to call people out, but I'm not actually calling you out. I remember you posted on Facebook saying, you know, every undocumented person should mentor another undocumented person at least like once a week or once a month, because that's true. We don't bring people to the top with us, especially in these movements when once you become the face, you know, everybody goes to you for that story, for that keynote, for whatever that is. So, like, how do we move away from all that?
That's a good question. I think at a personal level, I've become more definitely, you know, like being engaged and like doing all these like sharing my story and all these things was so important for me, you know, in my like transformative years when I was like, getting a better understanding of what, you know, being undocumented was. It was a really healing experience too, and empowering in some ways because I felt important. I felt like seen, right? But now, you know, like my priorities have changed. You know, like I have so many different other things that I want to accomplish, and having a really good understanding of that and just say, oh, it's time for me to move on, you know, do different things and really allow space for others to do the same and make mistakes, like mm-hmm. be problematic, you know, mm-hmm. and if you're that smart one, if you're that like woke person, like also just be patient with people, you know, like people are meet them where they at, you know, and like mentor them, like guide them through this in a really loving and compassionate way. Like it's really not that hard, you know,
yeah.
But people just take it so like, you know, I don't know why people are so like desperate for everybody to be on the same level, you know, like
mm-hmm. I think what you said is important to like meet people, you know, kind of like halfway, and also like loving them and with compassion, kind of like walking with them as well, because I think it's important for like all of us to like really understand kind of like where we're going as well. And I don't know, I feel like I didn't have anybody to kind of like walk with me, right? But until like college, that's really when I kind of like starting understanding like the way the system works and really everything. But we also have to think about like the people who don't have that access to higher education or the resources and all of that. And if they want to take, I think you mentioned it, like in a different approach, you know, to how they want to work all these like things out and how they want to figure out what pathway they want to do, still be supportive of whatever way they want to work. And also maybe thinking about how they're not comfortable yet, you know, they haven't gotten to that level of comfort of sharing their story. When like we first started like talking about in blue group right after the elections, like there was some of our members who were like weren't comfortable yet, you know, but some of us were like, no, we have to say something and we have to do something. And we're not just doing this for us, but we're also doing it to like protect those who right now don't have the means or like that courage to kind of like step up. And we've really seen that growth where now a lot of the younger, you know, members are now out there too, and expressing themselves and really like giving and like sharing the resources, you know, for others as well. So definitely like paving that path.
So what's your final message for people listening? Like if you could tell all of our listeners one message you want to relay across, like what is it?
I'll say be patient with yourself. Really, that's really like key. I think, you know, for me, I'm always really impatient, and I want things to turn out, you know, now, across the spectrum, right? Like in terms of career, in terms of, you know, like, you know, social justice movements, and I really want things to turn out, and I get so frustrated when things don't turn out, you know, and when I don't have it right, when I don't have the answer, it bothers me because I'm like, I know better. I like to think of myself as a person that is smart, that can make decisions for myself, right? I'm not the smartest, but I know how to navigate, you know, this world in differently. And for me, you know, like I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I forget that like I don't have to have the answers, you know. I'm just like a like any other person, you know, like I'm 24 and I'm still, you know, trying to learn what I want to do with my life, you know. Mm-hmm. Like what is it, what is my purpose in life, you know? Yeah. Like where do I see myself in, you know, 10 years from now, and things like that. And so it really takes a lot of courage and a lot of like love for you to like be okay with not knowing, and not knowing where you go, not knowing what you're like, where you fit in within a, you know, bigger picture in this, in the movement or whatever else you do in your life. And so that's just, I guess that's it, you know, just be patient with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Olga, do you want to ask the question we ask everyone?
Mm-hmm. So what do you imagine your liberation to look like?
Ooh, my liberation.
That's and whatever that means to you, because mm-hmm. it does not have to be in the context with, you know, when yeah. you're waking up and not being undocumented.
No, yeah, I think my liberation, I was just actually reflecting on this. My liberation, I think, is grounded in being vulnerable, fully being vulnerable around, like, about how I feel, and being comfortable just talking about everything that like impacts my life. You know, that's to me is the most freeing, like thing to do, to just really like. Be like, not be like so fearful of judgment, and you know, like, and all these other, you know, things that we socially construct, you know. Mm-hmm. So that for me is my liberation would be grounded on that. But of course, like, I think there isn't like there's no such thing as life liberation if it is not a collective one. And so mm-hmm. I can't be fully liberated until like everybody else around me feels the same way, and that to me, and that takes a lot of work, right? Like yeah. collectively.
Damn, that was fucking good.
Yeah,
that was probably the best answer we've got, and I'm not just saying that. So, you know, thank you for being here with us.
Yeah.
I wish we had much more time to just keep talking and talking. I've honestly feel like I've learned so much about you. But what do you want to do, like, a, you know, a selfish plug? Tell us about like your business, like, you know, something that we always say, our call to action for this one is like, support undocumented people doing other work. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, but something that I just want to say, I'm a photographer. So if you ever need a photo shoot, hit me up. LeoCarmona.com. That's my website. Find me on Instagram at LeoCarmona2. Everywhere, Leo Carmona. I'm your person. But also, don't hire me because I'm undocumented. Like, hire me because I'm a fucking badass photographer.
No, you fucking are.
That I'm like, yes, doing good work, you know, and I do it with passion, I do it with love, and I'm doing like intentionally, you know, like,
yes.
I don't like it when people are like, I just want to support you. I'm like, no, like, you're getting something out of this, you know, mm-hmm. like yes, thank, appreciate the support, but if you don't vibe with my stuff, it's okay, you know? Aquí hay espacio para todo el mundo, you know? Yeah. So,
oh my gosh. Saying, I love that. That was so great. Thank you so much. And yeah, catch us next time. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at ashotoftruthpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us a nice tweet at @shotoftruthpodcast. Or look on Instagram for behind-the-scene photos at Shot of Truth Podcast. You can also find us on Patreon and donate to our podcast at Shot of Truth Podcast. You can just assume it's all Shot of Truth Podcast. Podcast, podcast, podcast. A Shot of Truth Podcast, a Shot of Truth Podcast, a Shot of Truth Podcast.
This has been a Sound of Silence production.